Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity. If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. A little while back, I wrote a post on LinkedIn, just a few paragraphs, and I honestly didn't expect much from it, but it got more traction than most things I post, which usually tells me I've hit a nerve, or at least raised something that others are thinking about.
And what you raised in that post was something we see a lot in our work with learning businesses. The powerful and sometimes limiting role of credit, so CE, CME, CLE, CPE, and the powerful and sometimes limiting role of subject matter experts, or SMEs.
Right. Both are pillars in many learning businesses, but they can also quietly restrict innovation or even hold an organization back strategically, often unintentionally.
So in this episode, number 452, we want to unpack both how credit and SMEs function as enablers and as limiters, and what learning businesses can do to navigate those dynamics more intentionally, how they can be aware of these double-edged swords and make better use of credit and SMEs.
Right. And we'll also pull in some insights from others who joined the conversation in the comments on my LinkedIn post.
Let's start with credit. So this could be CE, CME, CLE, CPE, CEUs. However credit shows up in your learning business, it's often a baseline requirement. For a lot of learners, if an offering doesn't carry credit, it kind of doesn't count.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why offering credit nearly always increases demand. We've just seen that, you know, constantly and consistently over the years. It opens doors. It helps learners meet requirements. And it can even be seen as a point of legitimacy. So, this course offers credit, so it must be serious or credible because there's probably been some vetting, some requirements met for it to be able to offer credit.
But that's only one side of the sword.
Right. And the other edge is what happens to learning businesses over time. When credit becomes the main selling point, which it so often does with all sorts of organizations, the offerings start to get commoditized. If everyone's competing on credit hours, then it's just a race to the bottom in pricing or a race to package the same content in slightly different ways.
And I think this is especially true when you're pricing per unit, because one credit hour looks a lot like another, at least on paper, and it's often hard to differentiate based on content quality or instructional design when what a learner sees in your catalog is just a number, you know, one CEU or 2.5 CME credits, et cetera.
Right. And it becomes like producing widgets instead of, you know, producing rich learning experiences. You end up competing on volume or cost or convenience. And I don't know how many learning businesses there are that really want to be in a pricing war or a speed contest. That's not what most of us have signed up for. That's usually not a sustainable strategy.
And it can also be a distraction from the actual learning. When credit is what learners are focused on, then that kind of becomes the goal, checking that box, getting the points, getting those credits. And the focus then isn't necessarily on building real competence or real confidence in the learners.
Yeah, I mean, we hear about checkbox learning all the time. And, you know, I think this is one of the areas where we have a responsibility as learning leaders to ask, are we reinforcing that transactional sort of mindset? Are we contributing to the idea that learning is just a checkbox?
Yeah, and to quote you to yourself, I was going to say in that LinkedIn post, you wrote, whether or not offering credit is central to your learning business, continued creative efforts to provide and communicate value beyond credit is essential to an effective strategy in today's market.
Yeah, what a smart quote. That really is the heart of it. You know, the question I posed was, how are we, meaning, you know, we as a learning business, how are we creating or will we create value that transcends credit? Because if credit is your only hook, your only promise to learners, you're in a pretty vulnerable position.
Yeah, then you're kind of a one-trick pony. I think that the transcending credit part is where some of the most interesting comments on your LinkedIn post centered around those parts, and just that idea that organizations can kind of focus too much on credit requirements. And when they do that, they often miss the opportunity to foster that real engagement, to be part of facilitating deeper learning.
Yeah, I mean, that's really spot on. A lot of organizations get so locked into the mechanics of credit, you know, tracking hours, ensuring compliance, that they forget to step back and ask, what kind of learning experience are we actually creating here?
So let's maybe talk about some ways that learning businesses can create that value beyond credit. Let's talk about some of what we've seen that's worked.
Right. And, you know, one thing that stands out that we've talked about many times is application. You know, are learners doing something with the content? Are you helping them translate knowledge into action? That's inherently more valuable than passive seat time. And I think learners recognize it when it's happening, too. You know, this isn't value that's lost on them.
Right. Well, I mean, as a learner, I know if I'm in a situation where I'm actually translating what I'm learning into something that I'm struggling with at work or in my life, I mean, that's incredibly valuable to me, because it sort of then means, like, yes, I'm perhaps checking the box in terms of getting a credit that I need, but I'm also getting something that I also need in this other way that's going to help me do my job or work better. So yeah, I definitely see it as a learner myself.
And then when you have two checkbox alternatives, which is, you know, so often the case in these competitive continuing education markets, that you may have, you know, myriad providers you can go to for that continuing education credit. But if you know one of them is actually going to provide you with, you know, application and applicable results, that's going to, you know, skew you towards going back to that provider again and again.
So application, you just mentioned as being something that learning businesses can focus on as a way to create value beyond credit. I think reflection is another one, and that's something that we also talk a lot about. I think application and reflection are often tied together. But basically, are you building in time for learners to reflect on what they're being taught, to begin that process of connecting the material to their own experiences, to begin to make the meaning very personal for them?
Yeah, and it's often a very, you know, simple element to add, that we've made that comment, you know, many, many times over the years, that gets overlooked. So adding that reflection element, talked about application. Another one is community. So when learning offerings foster connection, that could be peer learning or discussion, maybe even cohort-based experiences, then you're offering something that credit alone can't match. And most of us, you know, as learning professionals know this. We know that so much of learning really comes out of social interaction, those informal elements that can be there to complement a formal learning experience, but are just so valuable in and of themselves. And I think this is just an area where, even though we know it, learning businesses have not, over the years that, you know, that we've been watching this, been as conscious and intentional about leveraging community as part of their practices as they could be.
Well, I feel like it's either not thought about, or to a certain extent it's thought about, but not scaffolded.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, yes, of course you're going to benefit from your peers, but it's sort of the way you achieve that is just by putting people in a room with their peers.
Talk among yourselves sort of thing, and yeah. need more than that.
There's also, I think, a brand dimension here, that if your learning business can be known not just as that place to go and get credit, but as a place to go where learners really grow, then your brand really is going to help build loyalty. It's going to help get people to keep coming back, because they're going to know that they're going to get opportunities for application and reflection. They're going to be able to have meaningful community connection. And so they're going to come back to you, not because they have to, because they probably, as you were saying, Jeff, have all these other choices, you know, for a place to go to just check the box for their credit, but they're going to come back to you because they want to.
Right. And of course, you know, that's what really changes the game. It moves you from transactionally oriented to relationship oriented to really transformational, you know, once you're kind of firing on all cylinders. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, that's what most of us, or at least I hope that's, you know, what got most of us into this space in the first place.
Now, of course, all of this doesn't mean that you're going to abandon credit entirely. I mean, credit does still matter, but what we're saying is don't let credit define the experience. Don't let credit be the only reason that your offerings exist.
Right, exactly. I mean, credit can be part of your value proposition, and it probably should be in many instances. You know, it's kind of the price of entry in many markets. If you're not offering credit, then you're not going to get that first look that you need from your potential customer. So we're definitely not saying don't do credit. You often need that credit, but it just shouldn't be the core of your value proposition.
Now, you also noted in that LinkedIn post that demand for credit tends to increase competition. I think that's already come up a little bit in what we're talking about here. Then, of course, when you have increased competition, that can drive down pricing. So all of that's another pressure point, another aspect of this double-edged sword of credit.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important one. We've worked with learning businesses that really feel stuck. You know, they know they're delivering high quality learning, but they can't raise prices because everyone else is offering, you know, 1 hour webinars for what, $29, or bundling dozens of hours together at rock bottom rates.
So again, I think it comes back to differentiation. If credit is the only selling point, so that 1 hour webinar, you know, with that 1 hour of credit or that one credit that goes with it, if that's all that you're talking about, then you're probably in a race that you really don't want to win.
That's right, because you're racing to the bottom, and you get to a point where you're charging so little that you have no sustainability. You have nothing to invest back into the learning business. Maybe you've eliminated everybody else, but you're going to have trouble, you know, thriving yourself. So you've really got to ask, what else do we offer that learners can't get elsewhere? You know, what's the transformation? What's the connection? What's the unique perspective or value we bring? And that can be hard work to figure that out. It really can be. And it can involve some tough choices about who you're serving and how you're serving and you know, all sorts of things, the things that are at the core, at the heart of effective strategy. But you have to do it. Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep expertise in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
So we've been talking about credit so far. Let's pivot to the second half of your LinkedIn post, another double-edged sword, subject matter experts, or SMEs, as we call them for short.
Yeah, so it's so much easier to call them SMEs, but we need to be
And I clear. Guess some people call them SMEs.
SMEs. SMEs or SMEs, yeah, but definitely less of a mouthful than subject matter expert. So SMEs or SMEs are essential. I mean, without them, most learning businesses would have a serious content problem. They're the ones with deep knowledge, with the real world insights, with the credibility that learners often expect. We know that, you know, that's a decision factor for learners to have those highly reputable SMEs involved.
Right. But that doesn't necessarily make those SMEs great facilitators of learning. They might be experts in their subject. I mean, that's kind of in their name right there. But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily experts in andragogy or pedagogy.
That's right. Most SMEs default to what they know, which is often lecturing. That's kind of, you know, the default modus operandi, to use a fancy Latin term for how your average subject matter expert is going to deliver their content expertise. And, you know, that might have worked for them in school or early in their careers. So it feels like, you know, that's the way to go. But it's not always the most effective way to support adult learners.
And I think a challenge is, you know, lecture is what the SMEs know. I think another challenge is that many SMEs don't have time or don't feel like they have time to try something new. They're busy. Maybe they're doing this in a volunteer capacity, or maybe they're being paid. Maybe it's modestly. And so asking them to rethink their whole approach to teaching something, that can seem like a really heavy lift to those people.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I think, you know, learning businesses have to be very intentional with this. We can't just hand SMEs a slide deck and hope for the best, or say things like, you know, be interactive, you know, be engaging. That doesn't really provide the support that they need. We need to coach them. We need to educate them about adult learning principles. We need to partner with them. I mean, this is the whole reason that we developed our Presenting for Impact course that's available for free, and we'll be sure to link to that. And in fact, I mean, we developed it because Jack Corson at ASHA saw this issue and felt that he wanted to be intentional and proactive in addressing this with the American Speech Language Hearing Association, ASHA's subject matter experts, and helping them with their online presentations in particular. So, you know, we developed Presenting for Impact for ASHA for that specific reason. It is now, you know, ASHA gave us the rights to offer it broadly so that other organizations can use it. And it is something that needs to be used. Whether it's Presenting for Impact or something else, you need to have that intentional, supportive approach to empowering your subject matter experts to become excellent teachers.
And having a resource like Presenting for Impact or other resources, I mean, what you're signaling with resources like that is that you really do care about supporting your subject matter experts, and that you're willing to partner with them. You're willing to work as a team with them. And I think that that can be really, really effective when it happens, when a learning business and its SMEs work together as a team. That can really open the door to better learning for the individuals participating in experience. But then, of course, it has ripple effects. You know, those learners who then maybe take something to heart and then go out and apply it, that benefits then the people that learner serves as well. So it really is just very powerful to think about how best to support and partner with your subject matter experts.
Yeah, I mean, that mutual learning is, it's just really key. You know, when staff bring knowledge about adult learning and SMEs bring content expertise, you get something powerful if there's trust and collaboration.
And I think that the focus of that trust and collaboration really is around helping that subject matter expert see herself not just as a presenter, but really embracing that role of facilitator, a facilitator of learning. And if that can happen, if that shift can happen, I mean, that's super powerful. That can really change the dynamic in any learning experience.
Right. And, you know, and that was that sort of need for support was echoed by a number of the commenters on the post. You know, there was one who called that process of helping content presenters become learning facilitators basically an untapped gold mine. And I think that's spot on.
Because when SMEs make that shift, when they say, okay, I'm no longer talking at people, I'm actually engaging with them, it really does change the nature of the experience. Learners tend to become much more engaged. The outcomes tend to be much stronger. And I think often the subject matter experts themselves feel more satisfied, you know, rather than kind of that sort of, I'm just up here lecturing and there may or may not, you know, be anyone in the room. I can kind of do this, you know, on my own, set me up and I'll just play out for, you know, 50 minutes or an hour or whatever. But when there's real engagement, I think that subject matter experts can get really excited by that and by seeing that knowledge transfer happen.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've seen that in working with organizations and their subject matter experts. Now, there's also another layer to this, and that's that increasingly SMEs can go it alone. I mean, we've talked about this. They can create a course on, you know, say, Thinkific or Kajabi or collaborate with LinkedIn Learning. They don't always need the learning business anymore.
Yes. And so that brings that the value we as a learning business have to offer, that has to go beyond logistics. It has to be beyond just sort of saying, hey, we can, you know, put you in front of a room full of people who need to hear about this topic or care about this topic. It has to, again, get back to a true partnership and bringing something to the table, the learning business bringing something to the table that helps the subject matter expert be more successful too.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why I posed the second bottom line question in the post, which was, how will we foster SME relationships and bolster SME capabilities to support our goals and theirs?
Because if we can't support SMEs in a way that aligns with their motivations and our organizational strategy, then we risk poor learning, we risk burnout, we risk disengagement, we risk losing learners and losing SMEs altogether.
Yeah, and then on the flip side, if we do support them well, if we train, coach, listen, we can create long-term relationships with trusted contributors who get better over time.
Yeah, I think it's like building a teaching faculty, even if they're volunteers, even if they're part-time contributors. You're investing in them as professionals, not just treating them as kind of vessels of information.
And again, that leads us back to value beyond the basics. When learners experience a well-designed session led by someone who truly knows the material and knows how to teach it, that's when you start standing out.
So there was one more idea that came up in the comments to your original post, Jeff, and I think it's something that it's worth talking about here. And it's essentially around how can we make sure that we create a shared purpose or community?
Yeah, you know, that one really struck me because at the end of the day, learning isn't just about gaining skills or fulfilling a requirement. It's also about belonging, about being part of something.
Yeah, and for learning businesses, that can be a huge differentiator. For learning businesses that are housed within an association, this is often completely enmeshed in their mission. You know, you really want to be about belonging and that sense of community. And if learners do feel like they're part of a community, if they feel like they're connected to others who are on a similar journey, then that's the kind of value that credit and the content that SMEs might bring. Those things alone can't provide because you've got this added layer, this added value of community.
It also opens the door to peer learning, to ongoing engagement, maybe even advocacy. When learners identify with the mission or the community, they're more likely to stay connected and keep learning and recommend your offerings to others.
And so I think this can become a third key question that we want to leave you, dear listener, with, which is, ask yourself, are we building offerings that foster connection and a sense of shared purpose, not just delivering knowledge?
We'll recap briefly and offer some reflection questions, so stick around to the end.
At leadinglearning.com/episode452, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast.
If you enjoy the Leading Learning podcast, please do us the favor of sharing this show with one colleague or coworker who you feel would appreciate and get value from it.
To summarize this episode, we've looked at credit and SMEs as essential but sometimes limiting forces in learning businesses.
Credit can be a value add, but it can also commoditize your offerings if it becomes the main driver. We have to find ways to offer something beyond the unit of credit.
And subject matter experts, they're your lifeblood, but they're not always equipped to deliver the kind of facilitation that today's learners need and expect. And that means investing in them and supporting them and aligning their work with your learning business's strategic goals.
And underneath both of these is a deeper need to build learning experiences that foster meaning, connection, and community. That's where transformation lives.
So ask yourself, what assumptions are you making about credit? What assumptions are you making about subject matter experts? Where might some new approaches open up greater value and a greater sense of community and connection?
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.